this went to the presiding disciplinary judge. The order, the request is eventually granted, and an order revoking probation was issued. And a one-year, one-day suspension was imposed. The issue before the court today is that, is whether the order revoking probation is void because it violates 25.17 Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure. More specifically, it's void because the motion to show cause to revoke the probation was filed outside the two-year specified period of probation. Now, the regulatory counsel argues that Ms. Bass was required under 251.7F, had an affirmative duty to file an affidavit that she complied with the conditions of probation. The record shows Ms. Bass did not file the affidavit, and therefore, regulation counsel argues, the PDJ did not issue an order finding that Ms. Bass' probation was successfully completed. Their argument is Ms. Bass remained on probation until September 9, 2011, when the presiding disciplinary judge issued the order revoking the probation and imposed the suspension. They argue there was no time bar for regulation counsel filing the request for an order to show cause because no order had issued terminating the probation. Our response to that is Rule 251.7D states that regulation counsel shall monitor the attorney's compliance with the conditions of probation. Now, under the applicable rule, filing the affidavit pursuant to 251.7F is in fact a condition of probation.
So when the time runs, that duty disappears to satisfy by proof that you completed the probation, is that true?
Our argument is that's a condition of probation. They're required to do that. And in response to Justice Hobbs' question, what I would say is, under that rule, our interpretation is that beginning on December 22nd, 2010, and continuing through January 6, 2011, Regulation Counsel, which was mandated to monitor this case, was required to see whether she filed the affidavit. When the Regulation Counsel received the information, or otherwise realized that Ms. Bass had not filed the affidavit, Regulation Counsel had the opportunity between January 6 and January 21 to proceed according to the requirements of 251.7E. In other words, and we've made this analogy, it's similar to a criminal probation case.
Now you'd agree though, during the period of probation, this was an affirmative duty of your client to file this evidence of completion, of rehabilitation, of suitability to go back to practice. After all, she was not suspended, she was given probation, right?
Given probation.
So she can ignore this deadline that's plainly in the rule, that's set up as a part of this whole business of giving her probation in the first place, instead of imposing the suspension. She can just ignore that deadline. That shows she's suitable to practice law. She can just ignore that kind of deadline.
Under the rule, if she does not file that, that's a violation. There's plenty of time, that time period, and she's specified when she's supposed to file that, or any person that's on probation is supposed to file it. If she doesn't file that, our interpretation of the rule is that's a requirement of probation. The Regulation Council is monitoring this case. They check. This case has come up. They see whether she's complied with that requirement. If she didn't comply, as the record shows she didn't in this case, then they're to file their motion, show cause, and the other conditions they feel were violated. But Your Honor's question goes to something saying, well, that just doesn't seem right. But it's similar, again, to a criminal probation situation. And I cite it to the Berkowitz case. In that case, the person was on probation and had a requirement to pay probation back to the victim. The theft case. Circumstances in that case were The time period expired, and no motion was filed by the probation department or the district attorney to revoke that probation. The trial court went ahead, revokes probation, goes up on appeal, and the appellate court decided that, well, you didn't file within the specified time period. The rule is appeal error. There are procedures to follow here. You have to file that motion. Now, the result is Ms. Berkowitz didn't have to pay probation. She wasn't no longer mandated. They couldn't get it from her through the mechanism of the criminal case.
Mr. Valley, I don't want to cut you off too much. Your time is short, and I think we appreciate that. And that analogy or what happened in the criminal situation. Sure. I wonder if you could address yourself to the question of the rules with regard to probation in the disciplinary context seem to be clearly different. I don't think you disagree with that. In the sense, anyway, that F requires this certificate by the presiding disciplinary judge that probation has been successfully completed. So I guess it seems the question is not, or at least in my mind, is not simply whether compliance with the requirement to file the affidavit is a condition of probation, but rather was the motion to revoke made within a time that the rule allows. And that raises the question then, what is the meaning of the certificate? If the probationer has completed probation and has passed the time in which it can be revoked, simply by passing a time period, what is the significance of subsection F and the required certificate? Would you address that?
Well, the significance is they do want that affidavit. They want some response from the attorney that's on probation. Well, did you comply? All right. So that's the significance of it. And then there's a provision that regulatory counsel objects to that, and there's a hearing on it or whatever, and the court decides, did you violate, did you not violate? The significance is, yeah, you've got to file that, but it wasn't filed. So when it wasn't filed, it then shifts. Our interpretation of the rule is it then shifts to regulatory counsel, which is monitoring all the conditions to file a motion to show cause. Because they can see it has to be done within a certain time period, which is within the probation period. If it's not, then that's a basis for a violation. They can put that up as a basis for a violation. But they've got to do it within that time period.
And perhaps I could ask one follow-up.
Sure.
In several places, the rule does talk about the period of probation or period that was initially given for probation. But with regard to the filing, with regard to the motion to revoke, doesn't the language talk about the period in which the respondent is on probation? And does that create any ambiguity in your mind about whether they're talking about a time period or whether they're talking about the period of time before the respondent successfully completes probation?
Well, if I understand your question, the way I respond to that is, and we can also look to the, in addition to the rules, look to the conditions of the order that were put down in this particular case. If they file a motion to show cause, that would toll the running of the probation period. That's significant. Why would you have that in there if the probation period is just going to keep running? Same thing in the context, similar in a criminal context. You file that motion to revoke probation, that tolls the running of probation. In other words, you don't have to speed around to get it done before. That freezes the running of the time. That's the same thing, the way these rules read, that should happen here. You just can't say she continues on probation. It says a specified period. If they want to stop the clock from running, you file a motion to show cause. And all the time periods are structured, so you have plenty of time within that period to do that. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
You may.
May it please the court. My name is Charles Werber. I appear on behalf of
colleague with me at council table is Mr. Kim Eichler, also the Office of Attorney Regulation Counsel. The issue here is a very limited one. And notwithstanding the discussion, the interpretation of the statute that I'm sure we'll have momentarily, initially, the question is, was the PDJ's order void? Did the PDJ lack subject matter jurisdiction to issue the order revoking Ms. Bass's probation? And I would suggest the answer is resounding no. The show cause, five show cause orders in this case, they were mailed to five physical addresses, emailed to an email address, sent to Ms. Bass's counsel of record. Ms. Bass never appeared. There was never a hearing. So ultimately, her probation was revoked. And she then filed a motion under Rule 60B3 challenging that order as being void, suggesting that she didn't get notice, but the record simply doesn't bear that argument out. But also arguing, as she does in this appeal principally, that somehow the judge's order is time barred and that that time bar is jurisdiction. But even the case that one of the cases that she cites, the Vail Arrowhead case, says that when a statute, or in this case a rule, is going to be construed to limit jurisdiction, that limitation must be explicit in the rule. And there is no explicit limitation here. And in fact, to the contrary, the subsection F that we've been discussing suggests that the PDJ retained subject matter jurisdiction over this matter. Of course he did, because he filed a complaint, he acquired jurisdiction, he approved the stipulation provided for probation, he retains the authority to enforce his orders, and under the probation order, ultimately, he's supposed to enter an order showing successful completion of probation upon Ms. Bass's filing an affidavit and application. So surely the PDJ had subject matter jurisdiction to enter this order. And even if this court were to ultimately interpret the order, the rule differently than we do and say, well, perhaps the PDJ erred, and we do not think he did in any respect. But even if you were to say that the PDJ erred, that would not render his order void, and therefore this appeal must fail. And with respect to the issue of the interpretation of the rules and some of the issues that were raised a few moments ago, we are to interpret a rule to give all parts effect. We're to interpret all parts harmonious. And so the Bass relies, as I understand it, by emphasizing, overemphasizing, we would suggest, subsection A of the rule, saying probation is to be for a specified period of time. She was ordered to a 2-year probation, therefore it can only be 2 years in one. But subsection F clearly imposes upon her a duty to file an affidavit and an application for an order showing that she completed the probation. And surely, reading these two together, until that order showing successful completion of probation issues, the regulation counsel may raise objection to that issue that she did not successfully complete her probation. And that's what happened here. We acquired information during the period of probation, as suggested by subsection E of the rule, that she was not in compliance. I think the record discloses in the motion to revoke the probation and requesting the show cause order, we communicated with her monitor. She was out of compliance, she came into compliance, she was out of compliance, and ultimately we filed a motion to revoke the probation.
Is there a difference between probation in a criminal case and probation for a discipline case?
Well, there's a difference, yes, Your Honor.
And what is it? Well, what's the purpose of probation in an attorney discipline case?
Well, the purpose of the attorney discipline system, and particularly the probation, is foremost prevention, rehabilitation, and education. And in an attorney discipline case, in fact, we are analogous in some respects to a problem solver. Because when we have a lawyer who's on probation, who we get information is not compliant, our initial goal is to try to help them comply or see how they can get back on track. But more to your question, in first of all, the interests are different. You're talking about a property interest in an attorney regulation matter. In the criminal case cited and discussed by Ms. Bass, there was a specific statute which contained specific deadlines. It did not require, as Justice Coates pointed out, the probationer to file an affidavit at the completion showing that they had successfully completed the term of the probation. And more to the point, getting back to my original point, the Berkowitz case does not say that the court lacked jurisdiction. Rather, it stands for the proposition that there was error. And again, this appeal concerns jurisdiction of the PDJ. And so in those respects, the two probations, the two scenarios are very different. With respect to the interpretation of the rule, however, we must give all parts effect, and clearly subsection F provides for closure, finality, an order from the PDJ showing successful completion. We have argued in our brief that until that order is entered, the lawyer remains on probation. Ms. Bass argues that somehow a lawyer can benefit from their inaction, that by not filing the application and affidavit, they shift the burden to the people. But that's simply not to be found within the four corners of the rule, nor does that make sense under the system that the rule contemplates. What makes sense is one of two interpretations. Either probation continues, or at the very least, the opportunity to file a motion challenging violations during the two-year period of probation continues until that final order is entered. And it was never entered in this case. Unless the court has any further questions for me, I have no further argument for the court.
Mr. Fulani.
Counsel has very articulately argued the differences between a criminal probation and a disciplinary probation. But I think the similarities are quite striking, and there's a good analogy. Regulation counsel and the rules and whatnot speak to protection of the public from attorneys that aren't functioning at a level that they should be functioning at and can damage the public interest and people to go to seek their legal services. Same thing in probation. What's the chief reason for a probation officer? To protect the public. To monitor the defendant in a criminal case, to educate him, to see what he's doing.
Yeah, but they're not supposed to do it for the probationer. All I'm concerned about is to protect the public
right
against malpractice, malfeasance, negligence, missing deadlines, missing court deadlines. And if this person can't meet the deadline having to do with the very self-interest of showing that by an affidavit, she's completed probation. How does that bear on the fitness to practice law that underlies this whole system?
Because what Your Honor is talking about is the result that comes out under the present rules. You could argue the same thing in Berkowitz. How's that protecting the public if she doesn't have to pay restitution?
Don't we look at the intent of the attorney regulation system and what our duty is, first of all, in supervising attorneys, licensing them, and then disciplining them? Right? It's a whole different aspect than the criminal law, it seems to me, that you're saying.
Yeah, I disagree, Your Honor. And what I say is, yes, you should file, the rule is you got to file that affidavit. But if they don't file it, then that's a violation. Okay, regulation counsel say that. Now, the result might seem, odd. And it was odd in Berkowitz. Well, she doesn't have to pay the restitution then. Change the rule then. That's the solution. If the rules come out this way, then it's the job of the court to make amendments to the rules. But the way the rules exist now, this is the result. That's our position. Now, counsel talks about closure and finality. I agree. We want closure and finality. But the person just stays on probation. Do it within the time period that's mandated.
Well, maybe it's tolling. Let's get your idea of tolling in there. Maybe the ending of the probation is told until she files an affidavit. Why isn't that a legitimate?
Because the way the rule
reads, you construe the rule.
The way that rule reads, it's that they have to file
something saying she revoked the tolling. There's nothing in the rules that you interpret that holds the running of probation, because it's specifically supposed to occur within a time period on probation. And adequate time is given to regulation counsel to note that it hasn't been filed and to file something in response showing that it hasn't been filed. Those are the time periods. So filing the affidavit doesn't toll the running. Filing a motion to show cause would toll. And that's what the time periods are. Same in the criminal context. You go outside the time period, it's too late to file a motion to revoke or a petition to revoke. The court loses the authority over the defendant to do anything about that probation.
And may I ask, the effect of that then with regard to the certificate of completion is simply the court loses the authority to issue or not issue a certificate because the time for issuing the certificate is passed? Is that rather than the requirement for a certificate suggesting that you can't complete probation until you've been certified? That's an effect.
That our interpretation of the rule is they have to file that. The rule is the probationer, the attorney probationer, has to file it. And then there's a chance for the regulation counsel to respond. But it has to be done within the time period. And once that passed, of course, the court, EDJ, has lost authority to rule. And that's our position on that. That way the rules exist now. And I think I've run out of time.
You have. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Bellotti.
Thank the court.
I should have mentioned that I didn't. Justice Marquez will not participate in this case. The court will take a 15-minute recess.